This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hi, I'm Kim Salmon. I'd like to have a quick word about public radio, particularly 3CR. The thing about public radio is that it's more open than the more formatted types of radio to what's going on around it. So when you listen to it, you're more likely to hear a reflection of real life. And 3CR, being in the heart of Smith Street, Collingwood, is a particularly good example of what I'm talking about. If you'd like to subscribe, the number is 94198377.
You've been listening.
It is curious that with the advent of the automobile and the aeroplane, the bicycle is still with us. Perhaps people like the world they can see from a bike, or the air they breathe when they're out on a bike. Or they like the bicycle's simplicity and the precision with which it is made. Or because they like the feeling of being able to hurtle through air one moment and saunter through a park the next, without leaving behind clouds of choking exhaust, without leaving behind so much as a footstep. And that's from Gordon S. Ladd.
Well, we know where we're going, but we don't know, where we've been. And we know not little children, and we know what we want, and the future is certain. Give us time to work it out.
That future is turning. You're listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show here on Radical Radio 3CR, 855 on the AM dial. Podcasting, streaming, or listening on that old AWA transistor in the kitchen. Many thanks to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!, always a window into the soul of America. We've got a bit of a show coming up today, but we're going to focus on bike lanes and cycleway design, actually how it works, are there any standards, what makes the best separated or non-separated bike lane when we need one. And for that, Faith, good morning, Faith.
Good morning, Val.
Is joining me and Afshin for a real discussion about this. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Hope it was not a lovely and warm trip in. For all those not had their long-fingered gloves out this year.
I think it was another beautiful, I think we're going to have another good week of those winter temperatures but sunshine.
We are, yeah.
Hold the magpies off for one more week.
Oh, no, I've been watching them. They're getting busy, you know. I'm checking out that they are. Look, we might kick off before we get on to this serious subject. Wanted to, Faith, we were talking about this beautiful weather we've had. I've got to say, I had a ride down to Point Ormond the other day. It must have been on the Monday, so it wasn't on the Sunday. It was about 19, 20 degrees. And that ride along that flat foreshore all the way down there is just one of Melbourne's lovely little... It's a lovely little diversion.
It's a beautiful ride. And coming back, you have the view of the city.
Yep.
Doing it at night is pretty special.
Yep. And all those hills, which is lovely for me. And the fact that, look, you can ride a long way past Elwood Beach and come back. I think you get two little traffic lights and then a pedestrian once they are, and you're virtually back at Jeff's Shed with two traffic lights.
Yeah.
And always something to look at. What about yourself? You've got a lovely moment to share.
A bike moment? I might be stealing someone's thunder with this, but I was at Bicycle Network and they've been rifling through their archives. the excitement. and pulled out some copies of, I think it was called Pedal Power, the little magazine that existed in the 70s and 80s. And looking through a couple of those and, you know, noticed there was one story about the Victorian government spending $8 million on bike infrastructure that year.
There we go.
Yeah, in 1980, whatever it was. That's a lot of money back then.
No.
Do they spend $8 million now?
Well, I'm going to have to. I'm going to play the press officer here. Now it depends on whether it's new money, old money, promised money, deferred money, or money that we've already promised but we're just re-announcing it.
Yeah, yeah.
That $8 million can get turned into $64 million very quickly.
Things were very simple back then.
I know. I'm not sure whether you
I'm
actually
not sure that actually got billed, but.
True.
May have. Maybe. Who knows?
What a tangent. There we go. Shin, what about yourself? You got something to share with us?
Mine is a bit international. I was overseas in Amsterdam a few weeks ago. And I was just coming back from dinner at this restaurant and walking. It was maybe 8 p.m. And there was I think, opera or a sort of a music festival finished. And I saw this young guy wearing tuxedo, very fancy, and carrying a big cello and putting it in front of their cargo bike and starting to cycle. And I was like, that's fantastic. Why can't we have that? Why don't we see that in Melbourne as often? You can cycle with your tuxedo and your big cello and a cargo bike and don't need to worry about getting sweaty or, being forced to go fast or all of those things. You can do all of those things. So it was a very nice moment for me that I keep thinking about.
Yeah. Lovely moment.
It's interesting. This came up in a little bit of a discussion the other day. I had a friend who's about my age, and we can get stuck in our ways of thinking about, what's the future of bicycles in the city? And I was explaining to him how much it's changed in that I can watch people now, they're, 5, 6, 7 kilometres from the city and they're riding an electric bike, but they're riding in a suit and clothes. And women riding with what they're going to wear to the office, not some sort of set of clothes you're going to have to change as soon as you get there. So it's really interesting watching the way that electric bikes especially have allowed people to do this. And it's great because you see people sitting bolt upright, lovely tailored suit, off their way to go to sue some person in a lawyer's office. But anyway. we're talking about that. A little bit of news, Faith.
Just a couple of things. Today is the last day to do the consultation on the banning of people travelling with e-bikes on trains. This is the proposed changes to the conduct on public transport regulations, and they will effectively ban anyone travelling with an electric bike on any train in Victoria, and then also V-Line coaches and some other minor changes to other modes. The consultation is at the engage.vic.gov.au/public-transport-regulations. Last day to do the survey or make a submission. And I would suggest if you've done that, you should then also send a quick email to your local MP and let them know how that will impact you.
Yeah. And if you can't find that, we'll put a link up.
We'll put the link up in the podcast, but if you want to have a look while we're on air, engage.vic.gov.au/public-transport-regulations.
There we go.
Also, just quickly.
Yes, didn't it?
In Yarra, the intersection of Scotchmer Street and St George's Road is getting a redesign to help make it better for people moving through, and some of those people are on bikes. There are designs up on Your Say Yarra for you to have a look at. I think one of the points for discussion is having some separation between bikes and other vehicles at the intersections. And you're starting to see this more and more, where a street might not have protected bike lanes, but the intersection does. And I think that's a really good reversal of some of the ways it used to be done, where we have the protected bike lane, but then nothing at the intersections because we have to facilitate traffic moving through. So well worth having a quick look at that and giving your feedback.
And if you want to know what those things look like, the corner of Culpin and Bridge Road has got exactly that. And the corner of Victoria and Nicholson Street have got, they're not separated bike lanes, but you get to the intersection, the traffic is then separated.
Yeah, yep. And there's some photos and design diagrams up on Your Say Yarra.
And we're going to be back just after this and talk about how to design a great bike lane.
Yarrabug would like to thank Bicycle Network for their financial support. Bicycle Network, a not-for-profit with 45,000 members, working to get more people riding for their health and well-being. Bicycle Network is proud to sponsor the Yarrabug program and support its important advocacy for safer and more accessible riding. By becoming a Bicycle Network member and or participating in one of their iconic riding events, you're supporting Bicycle Network's ride-to-school programs and advocacy campaigns to make it easier for everyone to ride a bike every day. Visit bicyclenetwork.com.au for more information.
And you're back listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show. As Val mentioned, our guest today is Dr. Afshin Jafari, Research Fellow at RMIT's Centre for Urban Research. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
And we thought, with your expertise, it might be a good time to do a deep dive into the design elements that help keep riders safe, because it's something that's been discussed quite a bit lately, different potential changes to cycleways. What are the things that help keep riders safe when they're using bicycle infrastructure?
Well, a lot of things,
yes.
But most importantly, separation. I think that's the main factor always. But there is a lot to discuss there and try to understand. And maybe I'll start with some definitions.
Yeah.
Because, we need to clarify some definitions so that we can talk about them. I think first is rideable width. So what is the rideable width of a road when we talk about that? And it's not just from curb to curb. It's not looking at how much space you feel like it's for cyclists. Actually, there are measures there that you need to consider. For example, the gutter pans, they are not considered part of the rideable width of the bike sort of side or bike lane or whatever part of the road that you're considering. Or there needs to be shy distances from physical barriers, mm-hmm. from the curb. All of those things need to come into consideration when you are talking about the width that you consider suitable for riding. So if you're going out and measuring with your meter to see what's the width, make sure to consider all of these, because those are also important. So that's the first definition. Another definition is this concept of operating a space or envelope, as in Australian context they use it, which is how much space a road user needs in terms of the width of that road user to be able to operate. And there are different guidelines and different measures. One of the well-known ones that I will continue coming back to in this show is going to be the one from National Association of City Transport Officials in the US, or NACTO. Also we have in Austroads in Australia, and City of Melbourne also has guidelines. So in all of these, for example, NACTO says 1.2 meter is the minimum operating space of a single adult bike.
Yeah.
And that's the minimum. Mm-hmm. So that is just you, the bike, a little bit of a movement space, and that's it. And when it's come to cargo bike, it's 1.4 meter. But then that's not desirable, that's the minimum. And the more desired space is going to be 1.5 meter or 1.8 meters for an adult bike. A single adult bike operating a space, a desired space is 1.8. So if you have a bike lane that is 1.2, that's already less than the amount of a space that is suitable for operating a space of a single adult bike.
Yeah. And it doesn't allow, because I know in Marybeck, for example, you see quite a few people now riding tricycles. So, and often that will be an indication that that person is riding with a disability or some sort of condition that affects aspects of their mobility. So it doesn't sound like you're accommodating a broad range of riders and maybe also discriminating against some riders by doing something that narrow.
Absolutely. And you have kids wanting to cycle next to their parents.
Yeah.
And nowadays, I think it's also much more relevant that you have e-bikes or some cyclists that are faster, they want to take over. So if you have only operating a space for one single adult bike, then how they're supposed to take over when one is faster than the other? And you have all those issues of, you know, people trying to take over in limited space and pushing each other.
Yeah. Or then the other alternative is some riders will then choose to just use the carriageway, the road carriageway, which can be fine, but that can also be a point at which some observers say, oh, well, they're not using the bike lane. It's,
And we've got a bit of a kooky thing here. You can get fined for not using the bike lane sometimes, which is a bit of a thing. We're talking about separated lanes.
Yeah.
The other thing about the narrower you become, the less room for error the cyclist has.
Yeah.
There's no escape.
Yep, exactly.
And are there considerations? Is it different if these protected bike lanes are next to parked cars? How does that impact?
So that was what I just said was just about the operating size of a single bike. But then, as you said, there must be room for people to be able to maneuver around things that might come around. So that's why we have guidelines for example, a one-way bike lane. What are the suitable widths to be considered for the bike lane? And there are different guidelines again. For example, City of Melbourne says 1.8 meters to up to 3 meters. NACTO says 2 meters to 2.4 meters so that you can have bikes taking over or cycling next to each other. And then when there is car park nearby or parking, you need to have room for the door swing. So that's very important because dooring, as we know all, we have probably, unfortunately, have experiences of narrow misses with dooring. That's very long, very common. And the guidelines say we need to have about 0.9 meters or 90 centimeters of distance or room for door swing.
Yeah.
So it's... Because then also those bike lanes could have a pothole or there could be an obstacle.
Exactly.
Or people need to maneuver around them and be able to avoid the door swing.
Mm-hmm. If we've got a, what do you think is, to give people a bit of, what would you think would be the best designed separated bike lane you've seen in Melbourne or we've got operating in Melbourne?
It's actually interesting because we're talking about Elizabeth Street. In Europe, but then if you continue, get to nearer to the CBD and Albert Street, you see the difference there. So you go from you continue that path, and then you get more and more better physical separation, physical barrier. I think that's the main thing.
It's, the main thing,
yeah. Chevrons, they're nice. You know, the bike lanes, paint on the road, they are nice. But then nothing beats the actual barrier that you have there that clearly marks it for everyone that this is the cycling space, this is the buffer, you're not supposed to come over this.
Yeah.
And, when you're opening your door, look out for cyclists.
Yeah. It's interesting. See, Albert Street's one of the first ones we've had here, as in the separated, and you look at it now, it's obviously way too narrow.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody can park a car there and take up half, open the door, pull the stroller, that's half the bike lane gone. It's really interesting to see how that was considered virtually, I'm not going to say state of the art, because there's only so much they could do, but you can see how narrow it is now.
Yep.
And it's a, when you were talking about rideability before, some parts of that Albert Street bike lane, especially if you're heading out of town and going downhill, if you think you can ride that at more than 10 kilometres an hour, you're taking a bit of a risk. It's a terrible surface. Yeah. There's no indication that those car parks are there at all. It's really, I mean, I focus on it because it's actually a real separated bike lane, but it then shows you some of the dangers of it.
And what about a more recent one like the St Kilda Road bike lanes? How do you think they rate against these guidelines?
Yeah, look, I haven't got the yep. exact like assessment.
Yeah.
But I feel like the main consideration here is that if you can take over other bikes, look, you can fit two bikes in a bike lane, and if there is a physical barrier that you clearly can say, okay, this is different to this is dedicated a space to cyclists, it's physically separated from car parks. I think that's the objective. That's what we need to aim for.
Yeah.
And there are some new bike lanes that I see in North Melbourne, for example, they are building. And, you know, I really enjoy, cycling on those streets in Arden Street. So, for example, that's very wide. You have physical separation and, you know, that's in the right direction. But, again, I think that's the idea to ideal to aim for, that you can take over and you have physical barrier.
Yeah, because those physical barriers really appeal often to women. And if you're having to travel with children... but if at the same time you end up in a situation where you have that pressure that people are banked up behind you and maybe impatient people, it sort of counteracts that attraction that they have for those other groups to ride.
Yep. And I had a colleague coming to us at RMIT from Europe, and she was saying that she feels so much stress cycling here, not because of cars, because all the bikes that are... going fast behind her, and she was living in a nice area, so there was all protected bike lane for her to get to RMIT, where we are, so she didn't have that conflicts with cars and motorists. But she was saying that the issue is because it's so narrow, I feel a lot of pressure and stress from other cyclists behind me wanting to take over and don't having a space, and I need to somehow give them a space to take over.
Yeah, so traditionally I think our cycling culture has been dominated by people who are interested in riding further and faster, and then we start building these lanes to try and encourage those huge numbers of people who say they're interested. But yeah, if we're not building to accommodate them, then it's really not doing what we're setting out to do.
Exactly. And I did some analysis over the weekend for the, for the show using Department of Transport's bicycle infrastructure data set that they just released, I think a few months ago. And that's actually a very useful resource for advocates also to try to use and interact with. And I used these distances or these widths that we discussed. So 1.2 meter as the minimum width of an adult operating a space for a cyclist. Do we have enough space for a single cyclist on our roads? And so from the analysis that I did on road lanes, so basic painted lanes, protected on road bicycle lanes and buffered bicycle lanes, so that looking at these across Greater Melbourne, 16% of them are less than 1.2 meters.
What?
So they are less than the operating space of a single adult bike. 16% of currently existing on-road bike lanes in Greater Melbourne are less than the space that is needed for one single adult operating a space of that, which is 1.2 meter. And then if you look at how much of those are less than 1.5 meter, because 1.5 is what you really need if you want to move a little bit around, if there is something you want to maneuver around it. Total of 50% or 53% of bike lanes in Greater Melbourne are less than 1.5 meters. So half of them are less than 1.5 meters. So that's why I think it's very important if you have somewhere that has proper space dedicated to cyclists, to bike, we need to protect that and we need to advocate for that, because this is the situation that we have. We have half of the bike lanes less than 1.5 meters across Greater Melbourne, and we need to try to make it bigger not a small version.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is there no standard? Is there a... I mean, we're not good with standards in Australia. I think, oh, we have them, but we don't follow them sometimes. Is there a standard?
There are. There are guidelines and standards to follow. I think the main thing is that so the way that it works is that we have OSTROADS that sets the, you know, the big guideline for the whole country, and then states and councils they need to have their own guidelines and implement based on that. And the OSTROADS guidelines and the standards are very, not that high. In that sense, so they're very low. Like you have 1.2 meters width for bike lanes. So they are, they're not enough. I think in the current context that you have different types of bikes, different types of cyclists,
in different lanes.
Mm. Yeah,
yeah.
But so that's then up to the cities, the states to really think about who they are building these for and try to accommodate their needs. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's what where we are now. We need to really act for that.
So were the OSTROADS guidelines come up with maybe at a time where we didn't expect as many people to be riding cargo bikes or to be riding with children?
Exactly.
And maybe a different type of cyclist?
Exactly. Much more uniform back in that time that you had mostly Lycra cyclists riding narrow road bikes. And that's, when you look at those, maybe the at that time it made sense. But today you have cargo bikes, you have kids with parents, you have e-bikes who want to take over and go fast. You have food delivery bikes. You have all of these different types of users of the bike lane that really you need more space.
Yeah. And one thing you notice if you've been in the Netherlands is the number of people who are riding, using bike lanes, not only on bikes, but on mobility scooters that elderly or often disabled people use. And they're significantly wider than a bike or even a cargo bike. So having those wider lanes are common. It gives those people a space. They're not on the footpath with the pedestrians. They're able to go a little bit faster than they might have been on a footpath. But they're accommodated, again, by having those wider, safe spaces for wheeled.
Yeah, and I think there is something there, I think a little bit more, about the concept of when we are thinking about road design, the safety comes first. So the safety must be first, and then efficiency, and then the demand of the road and all of those things. Like one example that I think about is that we are not going to increase the speed limit of a small laneways in the CBD to 100 kilometers per hour because there are lots of car traffic there. No, safety is first. There are narrow. There is a speed limit that it can't go higher than that. So why we don't have that level of strict following the guidelines and safety when it comes to other road users like cyclists? When we say, okay, we have cyclists, the minimum operating space for a bike is 1.2 meters. There needs to be at least that much space for a bike or desired space of 1.5 for them to maneuver. And then that buffer from car dooring that needs to be properly keeping them separated from the danger.
Yep.
And it's an opportunity to put some streetcar in and actually, absolutely, I'm going to say reforest some of the roads that we've put in. It makes a, it
that
would make a big
can
difference.
Be, yeah, provide a lot of amenity to all the road users.
And look, I think we need more bike lanes. We certainly do. That's what
we need better bike lanes.
Sorry, yes.
I think I that's clear from the figures Afrin has pulled out.
I'm starting to realise how many bike lanes I ride along that are less than 1.5 metres. It's actually, thanks for bringing that to attention. Because, look, a friend of mine, I think it was you, Faith, said a bike lane's not safe unless I can safely let my 8-year-old daughter ride to school. Yep. That means a safe cycling lane in a lot of ways. So obviously we've got a fair bit of work to do, but we obviously can see that We're not good at enforcing standards or making sure things fit within a safety audit.
Yep. And I think that's all we have time for today. Thank you very much for coming into the studio.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's great. Some good news. we'll be back in 2 weeks' time.
Yep. And coming up next is...
I think it's Shebop, but let's have a look and see what happens. Take care.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.